I don't quite know what to say. We're working on it. Three teenagers in Southern California went to a Friday night high school football game. They randomly picked out a handsome young couple and proceeded to shoot the boy in cold blood. There was no provocation, no revenge, no turf battle, just looking for a thrill. The three boys escaped the stadium before the security guards could react, but what happened next makes it even more chilling. They drove directly to a fast food restaurant three blocks away and ordered double cheeseburgers, fries, and Cokes. And as they ate, they laughed about how their victim had gurgled in his own blood while he was dying. Judge Roy Moore, an Alabama State Supreme Court judge, was removed from office Thursday, November the 13th, 2003, because he refused to obey a federal judge's order to remove from the rotunda of the state building a monument on which was displayed an engraving of the Ten Commandments. Two events, one in Alabama, one in California, but they're connected. When I was a kid, whenever we wanted to say how things were connected that you didn't sometimes know were connected, we would talk about a tie vine in a cotton row. Now, that doesn't make any sense to a lot of you, but when you grab a tie vine and shake it, sometimes things shake way down the row that you didn't know it was tied to. There's a connection between these two events. Sometimes we can't see it. There's a song that some of you will be familiar with. It's an old song now, but it's called Third Rock from the Sun. She walks with some apologies about using this song in a sermon. She walks into Smokies one hip at a time, like a broken field runner slipping through the line. He likes the way she looks, so he calls the little wife and says, "Don't wait up for me, I'll be working late tonight." Wife hangs up the phone, bursts into tears, calls her sister up, cries, "Get over here." Sister tells her boyfriend, "Be back in a while." Boyfriend wants a root beer. The store is just a mile. He leaves the motor running. He'll only be a minute. His car drives away with teenagers in it. The driver tells his buddies, "Got one life to live." They scream into the night, "Let's get it over with." Cause and effect, chain of events, all of the chaos makes perfect sense. When you're spinning round, things come undone. Welcome to Earth, third rock from the sun. The kid guns the gas, the car starts to swerve, heads for a semi-truck, jumps the curb. Truck hits a big boy in Shoney's parking lot. Flies through the air, taking out the bank clock. Clock strikes a light pole. Transformer sparks. Lines go down. Town goes dark. Waitress calls the cops, says she saw it all, swears a giant alien has landed at the mall. Cops ring up the mayor, say there's panic in the streets. "We hate to wake you up, but we can't find the chief." Mayor says, "Use your head. If he ain't in his car, he's hiding from his wife down at Smokey's bar." Cause and effect, chain of events, all of the chaos makes perfect sense. When you're spinning round, things come undone. Welcome to Earth, third rock from the sun. Now, I don't know if you caught the chain of events in this, but there's a question to be asked at the end of it. Why did the lights go out all over town? And you start tracing it back, and they went out all over town because the chief of police planned to commit adultery on his wife. Do you think that the people whose lights went out all over town knew the reason why their lights went out? They didn't have a clue. Let me connect a senseless murder in California with the removal of a state judge in Alabama, if I can. And I will tell you, it has to do with truth and the value that we in America place on truth. The founders of our country left Europe to escape religious persecution. They founded a nation that they chose to characterize at some point after that as one nation under God, a Christian nation, founded on principles not of the Quran, but of the Bible. A nation that still has, at least for the time being, on its currency, paper and coin, the phrase, "In God we trust." In 1962, the Supreme Court struck down the recitation of prayer in school. In 1963, the Supreme Court took away the practice of Bible reading and reciting the Lord's Prayer in school. And even though a CNN USA Today Gallup poll reported that 77% of the American people supported Judge Roy Moore in defying the court order, he was removed from office. So, all of you under 40 years old have grown up without these freedoms. Did you hear what I said? In the United States of America, in the land of the free, in the home of the brave, we've lost these freedoms. Christianity has a high moral standard, and that standard is based on the Ten Commandments. And in case you don't know it, a society that is based on a moral standard is a much kinder and gentler place to live than one that is not. People who are taught and encouraged to live by not only "thou shalt not kill," but an even higher standard, "don't hate your brother." And truthfully, yet even a higher standard that says, "love your enemies and do good to those that persecute you." And when we are taught that standard from our childhood, we grow up to be different people than if we're taught by the standard an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Question. And this is a question that puzzles me. I don't have the answer for it. Why would someone want to do away with that standard? Not only don't steal, but don't covet. Why is there such a determined effort to get rid of the Ten Commandments? What has changed in our thinking so that we even approve and sympathize with getting rid of Christian principles in public places? What do they threaten? What does the Bible threaten? What do you gain by getting rid of those principles? What do you have when you remove a high moral standard as the standard of conduct for people in a society? Well, you have three teenagers in Southern California sitting down, eating cheeseburgers and fries and drinking a Coke, laughing about a murder they've just committed. You have school shootings. You have disgruntled employees who shoot their supervisors. You have a society that's entertained with perversion. You have a Georgia teacher's manual that instructs, quote, "what do you say if a student asks you if shoplifting is wrong?" And the approved answer is, "I cannot tell you if shoplifting is right or wrong. You must decide for yourself." Real war has always been, what is truth? What's the standard? Who gets to say what the standard is? Do the Muslims? Do the Branch Davidians? Do the Nazis? Who gets to say? There's where the war really is. The Ten Commandments are truth. Not conditional, not situational, not true sometimes and untrue at other times. These are eternal truths. It's always been wrong to commit murder, to steal, to lie, commit adultery. It's not arbitrary. These principles came from God's very own nature. And we've been here before, and we'll be here again. Is there anything God cannot do? Yes, there are some things God cannot do. God cannot lie, He cannot cheat, He cannot steal, He cannot commit adultery. These are eternal truth principles that spring from God's very own nature. Someone says, but the Ten Commandments were part of the law of Moses, and the law of Moses was taken away. Question. Was it wrong to kill before the law of Moses was given on Mount Sinai in Exodus chapter 20? Was it wrong to steal? Was it wrong to commit adultery? Yes, 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 yes. And so the Ten Commandments are not true because they're part of the law of Moses. They're part of the law of Moses because they're true. And they're part of our society, and they were part of the world society before the law of Moses was given. And they're still a part of societies that accept those standards as true. And because they were incorporated in the law of Moses doesn't mean that they're no longer true, because the law of Moses is no longer applicable in the sense that we're trying to be justified by it. The Ten Commandments were not new truths, nor were they exclusive to the law of Moses. They were true for the Gentiles while the law of Moses was applicable to the Jews, and they're still true. In the law of Moses, God incorporated punishment for those eternal truths. If a person is a murderer, what's to happen to him? If he's a thief, what's to happen to him? God put those punishments associated with them and put them in writing so that we would know how God feels about transgressing His moral law, sin, and show what the serious consequences are. And in case there's any doubt in your mind, Romans chapter 1, verse 18 through 32 ends up by saying, they that do such things are worthy of death. Just to let you know how God feels about those behaviors. It's always been wrong to commit adultery, and it always will be, regardless of what the Supreme Court of the United States of America says. Truth is not determined by popular vote. The Ten Commandments are the basis for God's standard of human behavior, and they always have been, and they always will be. And this may come as a shock to us who live in however many generations of freedom in the United States, but a Christian does not determine right and wrong. That's not your decision. Society does not determine right or wrong. Is something right or wrong because it's legal? No. There have been things, we can go back in our own history and see that there were things at one time that were legal that were morally wrong. I mean, most people would agree that slavery would fall into that, and at one time it was legal. Did that make it right? There are things today that our government will allow you to do and says you have the right to do that. That doesn't make it right to do it. The right to do something doesn't make it right to do it. Standards constantly change in societies. They don't get higher. They get lower. And without God's law, Christians will be influenced more by society standards than God's standards. And that's where we come in, folks, for one another. We're here to remind ourselves that while we are law-abiding citizens, we're the most law-abiding citizens of all, then we have a higher standard to which we live, God's moral law. And without God's law, we will find ourselves being influenced by the flavor of our culture. And today's flavor happens to be tolerance. And that affects the standard. We teach and practice God's standard of behavior. Why did those three boys shoot that young man in that football stadium? Well, the answer is not really because when the world's spinning round, things come undone. That's really not the full answer, is it? But because we're standing by while our moral principles are being eroded and taken away from us and replaced by a different standard. And we're like the frog in the kettle. It happens gradually in one little small piece at a time so that we don't really feel a lot of pain at any one given time. And when you make one concession, then that leads to another, which leads to another. And at some point, how can you go back? Because you've agreed to those changes all along. And how can we ever stop this decline? How can we ever get off of this greasy slide? Because and only when and if we say, God's word is my standard. That determines what I approve of and what I participate in and what I agree is right and what's wrong. And the world tends to get us confused. Because given a little bit of time, you can make anything make sense. Even killing 6 million Jews to a whole nation of people. You can make it somehow make sense. But when the world confuses you and you're just not quite sure what the standard is. In John chapter 12, Jesus said, "As for the persons who hear my words, but does not keep them, I do not judge him. For I did not come to judge the world, but to save it. There is a judge for the one who rejects me and does not accept my words. That very word which I speak will condemn him on the last day. For I did not speak of my own accord, but the Father who sent me commanded me what to say and how to say it. I know that his commands lead to eternal life." And let's not let ourselves forget it. There's only one way to heaven. That's not a very popular thing to say today, is it? There's only one standard. And the sad thing is how we allow ourselves and our society allows itself to be confused about what our standard is. But one day there will be no confusion. And when that day comes that we stand before God, each one of us individually, there won't be any confusion about what the standard is. And the trick to this life is, let's make sure we know what standard we're going to be judged by. And let's live by that standard while we stand and sing.
I'm going to come up here where we have a microphone so I don't have to yell. Everybody, this is Janae. Janae is one of our wonderful young ladies in this youth group here. And Janae has decided this morning that she is tired and weary of a life of sin and is ready to put Jesus Christ on in baptism. And I've got to spend about a week with Janae up at camp at Wildwood this last week, and great time. And she and I got to talk a little bit while there, and she said, "Well, don't be surprised if I call you pretty soon when we get home." Well, yesterday I get a call, and her daddy David is going to baptize her here in just a minute. If you don't know the Ince family, it's David and Janet and her older brother Jared. But Janae, as we get ready to do this, I want to ask you a question that most important question you will ever answer. Do you believe with all of your heart that Jesus Christ is God's Son and that God raised Him from the dead?
Yes.
I know you do. I know you do. And that confession is the first step towards being God's child. Let's go back and get you.